Let's go. Land Board meeting, February 14th, 2020.
Some of the matters before the board, the person may wish to reduce it, and just in case decision and the department will treat the decision as final and proceed accordingly.
Okay, first we have the minutes from the January 10, 2020 meeting. Any comments from board members that you haven't already given early corrections? Any public testimony on this? Not. Is there a motion to approve?
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, first up is D2.
Morning, board. D2 is a right of entry for the Dinosaur Beach Volleyball Tournament at Kalahaki. I'm asking the board to grant this one as gratis because they use the whatever revenue they generate to put back into the expenses of the tournament.
Okay, any questions? Anybody want to add anything? No? Any public testimony? Not. Is there a motion to approve D2?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, board.
Okay, next we are going to do D3.
You sure? You don't want to hold that until.
Okay, sorry,
never mind.
We're going to do M1 through 7.
Morning, Chair Chase. Board members, Ross Smith from the Department of Transportation Airports Division for items M1 through 7. DOT wishes actually to withdraw M7 from today's agenda. We'll bring it back to you in the near future.
Okay, withdraw M7. Okay, M1 through 6 then. Let's do M1 through 4 first. Anybody have any questions on M1 through 4? Any public testimony on M1 through 4? Now, is there a motion?
Move to approve M1 through 4.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, M5. So we do have some other testimony, I guess.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. No, on M6. So M5?
M5, we're at Hilo International Airport, we seek approval to issue a lease to Southwest Airlines to develop, construct, operate, and maintain offices in the main terminal, rental for the first year of the 5-year lease term for 2,376 square feet will be $98,461.44. Rent is determined annually as part of the square footage and annual signatory airline terminal rate for Hilo.
Okay, any questions, board members? Any public testimony?
I usually ask a bunch of questions about these direct leases, but I can understand why putting something like this out to bid might enable a competitor airline to make it very inconvenient for a new entrant to operate. So I can understand the direct lease here.
Okay, is there a motion to approve M5?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, M6.
M6 is at Lihue Airport. DOT seeks approval to issue a grant of non-exclusive easement and management and construction right of entry for the Ahukini to Lidkei Park bike and pedestrian shared use path to be conducted by the County of Kauai. At the Department of Public Works, the county will be doing a topographical survey, which would include cutting trees and shrubs to clear the line of sight for the survey to go on.
Okay, any questions? Is there public testimony on this one? No. Okay, is there a motion to approve M6?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
That's everything. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, now we're going to do K2.
Office of Conservation and Coastal Lands. Good morning. So we have here, remember last month or perhaps the last meeting, I can't recall exactly, we brought you a case involving an alleged unauthorized TVR, transient vacation rental case. And so today we have three more cases from the same area, just to give you some context. But this is a case involving an alleged unauthorized, actually this is a got a couple elements to it. It's we're alleging the house is unauthorized, and we're alleging that the property has been used as a TVR. Landowner is Sherry Parrish Hamilton. This is, of course, in Honaunau Beach Lot, South Kona. So there's a lot of sort of facts in the case. I'm not going to go through each and every one, but this is a typical case where they went to the county to apply for a what we call a certificate of registration to conduct short-term vacation rentals as a non-conforming use. The county basically told them that it's in the conservation district, and so it's prohibited, and that they have to see us. The county informed us of the situation. We then reached out to Ms. Parrish Hamilton, and that's the case sort of goes from there. So the issue with the home is that when we were doing our research, we found that the home that is there now is not permitted. There was a home on the property. It was a non-conforming home from the distant past, and the home there today is much different than the home that we feel was originally on the parcel. That being said, I never visited the site, and my staff didn't visit the site. We went through the county records. We looked at Google Maps. We pulled imagery, satellite imagery, showing the site. The Hamiltons did come to the OCCL back in the 2000s, around 2005, seeking permission to remodel or rebuild the structure. We told them that, ultimately we told them, yes, it's a Kuleana parcel, and you could do that, but you would need to get a permit to do that. Then there's sort of radio silence, and so my assumption here is that based on the facts that we have, is that they went ahead and made the improvements without getting permits from us. And so that's what that case is about. And so we have the unauthorized structure, and then we have the unauthorized transient rental situation. And so if you see the recommendations, we're basically asking for a $15,000 fine for the TVR. You can see that we're asking for another $15,000 fine for the unauthorized single family residence. And there's one more request for a fine having one's for the TVR, one's for the unauthorized home, and the other one is for a setback violation, because the home was built in the side yard setback. And administrative cost, total fine of $47,000. And of course, the other condition regarding acknowledging that they're not going to do it any longer, having them file a declaration stating that it won't be done any longer, and so on and so forth. So I'd rather just let the attorney maybe address you rather than me labor on about this. But I feel the case is pretty decent.
Okay. Any questions, or do you want to hear from me?
Well,
Well, I have a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Just as far as investigating things, you have a working relationship with DoCare where you could have a DoCare officer go and take pictures of a house like this?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. You have a recommendation that they would get a permit to legitimate, that they would apply for a permit to legitimate the house within, I forget if it was 60 days or 90 days?
90 days before, yeah. 90 days.
Would this be, would they need an EA?
In this case, probably not, since it's already there. It's been there for a long time.
Okay.
I mean, I...
When you process the permit to the board, it would have to... They would have, you know, do an exemption?
Yeah, we'd have to find some sort of exemption. I'm not sure what it would be. We've done it before with situations like this where something's there and it's in a, maybe it's in a residential neighborhood, and I wanted to just get the case into compliance.
Okay. The rest of the neighborhood is in conservation too?
No, not all of it.
Not all of it.
Just a portion of it.
Okay.
More of the sea, this, you know, the ocean, more closer to the ocean, it's conservation.
Okay. Okay.
Case members of the board on all that phone on behalf of Ms. Sherry Hamilton, who's here with me today. She is the landowner of the parcel that OTCO just discussed. So I'm not sure if you folks have had a chance. We did submit testimony yesterday. We realize it's somewhat lengthy. I do have hard copies. Should the board require hard copies, please let me know. But as OCCL said, there are essentially three violations here. The first violation, alleged violation, is they want to fine Ms. Hamilton $15,000 for not having, or for having a structure that's unpermitted. The second $15,000 for having the structure in the setback. And the last $15,000 is for the transient rentals of the property. You know, as we detailed in our submittal, there are a number of factors and reasons why we don't think that those fines are warranted. Number one, the amount, $47,000, it's a lot. It's the maximum fine allowed by the board in this case. With respect to the conservation district use permit, you know, as staff said, this is a Kulana parcel. An existing home was allowed to be built on the property without a permit. When Ms. Hamilton received the property in 2005, you know, there was an sorry, 2003, excuse me, 2003, there was an existing structure that was already close to 1,700 square feet. From OCCL's research and looking at the field book that the county has, you know, the structure was just shy of 400 square feet. So we can see where the discrepancy is. But when this happened, 1976, right, the field book. And so when Ms. Hamilton acquired the property in 2003, she actually hired a surveyor to go ahead and document the existing conditions. That is in the staff submittal as Exhibit 7. And that was submitted with her 2005 application to the board, at which time she did propose to expand the structure to 3,000 square feet. However, she never went ahead with those improvements. So we just want to make sure that the board is aware of that particular fact. The structure, when she purchased in 2003, as noted on Exhibit 7 to the staff submittal, the existing structure was already in the setback. So again, she's taking the property as it was when she received it in 2003. And so we don't feel that the fine, maximum fines of $15,000 for having the structure without a conservation district use permit and having the structure in the setback is fair to her as an owner who took the property, you know, as is when she purchased at that time. With respect to the last fine for $15,000 for the transient rentals, you know, we look at the rules, and though the restriction on transient rentals really comes from a permit condition to a conservation district use permit. Ms. Hamilton's property, as we discussed, it's a Kuleana property. The structure, the existing structure is allowed to be there without a permit, in our, you know, at least in our view. And so to have her fined $15,000 for violating a condition to a permit that she doesn't need, you know, we also don't think is warranted in this case. So that's the legal position in a nutshell. I know Ms. Hamilton wanted to share a little bit about the property and the history of her family in that area, if she may.
Aloha, board. My life has been blessed because my ohana is all from Honanau Beach. My grandfather was the caretaker for Honanau Park before we became a national park. We actually had his house right on the beach, and he was a canoe builder. He was also a fisherman and made fishnets. My ohana still remains there in the area. I was blessed again to obtain this land for my ohana, originally traced back to 1917 with my great-grandmother, Pua Ho'ohuli. I remember my grandfather building canoes on the very land as prior to the Tuileries Free School on one side and the National Park on the other side, but way before. And I have records dating back since 1938 and 1944 when the single family residence was already been built, recorded, because it came from my family. So on the title report you can see that as well. And so when I obtained it in 2003, I went ahead and asked a land surveyor to go ahead and survey what was existing. And so in the documents, in the maps, you'll see the existing structure, and the footprint was 36 by 36 with a garage. So that's around 1,700 square feet at the time. And then the current existing structure is currently around 1,100 square feet. I did it only because when the architect we had drawn up for us, he made this 3,000 square foot monstrosity that belonged in Mauna'ani or up north instead of Honanau. And so I took a drawing and I made it 846 square feet, and plus a couple decks, which is now existing 1,100 square feet of house. The house is primarily used by my ohana for fishing, diving, canoe paddling, and shared to the community surrounding, including the members of the national park, members of Kamehameha Preschool, fishermen, ohana for family reunions, Queen Liliuokalani canoe paddling, and others. Many have asked to use the house for birthdays or reunions, and I've actually shared it, and they've actually just, you know, given a donation for the utilities. So over the last couple years, I tried to apply for the SCBR and make it all legal down there, because I was sharing it with a lot of people, and I thought, well, you know, best to get it all up to speed here. So I had a website, and it's no longer on the web as soon as I got the letter from DLNR and the county that there was in a conservation district. And when I first purchased it for the cousins, it wasn't used like a transit rental. We had all kinds of people using it for days on end to a few months. And they used to use it for holo holo, go fishing, they made arts and crafts. We've got 10 coconut trees on there and all of that. And I try to be a good steward of the for my ohana, being that you know, we've been there for many, many years. And so I just wanted to use it for that fact and share it to the people in the community. And having been located next to the national park and the preschool for Kamehameha, I think that it's charged me all these violations because, I mean, I've got hundreds of tourists coming by in both corners of the property. We're right next to the entry of the national park, and there's a security guard right there, just within 100 feet from the house, and on the other side of the school, and they're basically going to two-step and feeling two-step up like crazy. So I've got tourists there every day. And thousands, if you go to the national park, they'll tell you there's been, the record is a thousand people a day visit the park. So given that, my intention was not to violate anything. Anyhow, I wanted to at first build this big house, but then I just prayed about it, and my family is Ohana, and Ohana now is not crazy, big, crazy. So I just wanted to build something simple and keep it in the family and just share it. And so, and also just to be Pono both then, now, and in the future. It is, it started with Maka EOP. He was the original owner from the Great Mahele. My family from Pua Ho'ohipuli took it from him back in the early 1900s. And so we called the place Hale Maka Io, which is the eyes of the Lord, and hope to continue to share the Mana'o and the spirit of the Honanau Bay for years to come. I thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Sherry. Just wanted to correct a statement. I was referring to Exhibit 7 earlier. It's Exhibit 3, page 6, actually. So apologies for misdirecting. This is for the staff submittal. I refer to the surveyors, the survey of the existing conditions. It's actually Exhibit 3, page 6, so apologies for that mistake.
Looking at the staff submittal, there's a picture of the old house. Mm-hmm. It looks pretty run down.
Mm-hmm.
Was it habitable?
Yes.
In 2005?
2003. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
It was.
It was being used as a rental, as a transient rental. Yeah. We had people in there all the way to the tunnel, close escrow. Mm-hmm.
The house looks it's... There's only one picture, which I guess came from you.
Yes, yes. I'm trying to show it, yeah. And that's why I did the survey as well, to see, show the top of, because back then you don't have any drones to go over the house to show the top portion of the roof, like you do now with Google Earth.
Right, and we were telling you that when Ms. Hamilton first acquired the property, there was significant vegetation, as you can see in that picture that was submitted in the 2005 around, so that was part of the activities that took place, was kind of clearing that vegetation that was kind of around the house.
So, the surveyor called it an existing shack, and in was that demolished to rebuild the house?
No, we actually used each wall. We went and took and carefully, you know, redid and reused the same materials that were in the house. I used the windows. We used the trim. You know, we used a lot of it. So slowly we repaired it.
But not demolished.
But then not demolished, no.
Hmm. Is the house of the same design as the previous house?
Pretty much, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any photographs of
Do you have any other photographs of besides the one that we have in the staff submittal of what that house was like? In 2003, or during the rebuilding of this house?
I do. I have some.
Were you going to bring them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me see.
So, are you saying the square footage of the current house is the same as the previous house plus?
It's actually smaller, so So when Ms. Hamilton acquired the property in 2003, the square footage was approximately, was just shy of 1,700 square feet, about, I think it was 1,696. The current structure is at 1,100 square feet. So it has been reduced in size a little bit.
Yes.
Oh, but you don't have any pictures of it now.
No.
They have one in the staff submittal, but it's not, it doesn't show very much of the house.
No.
It just shows.
I mean the one in the staff submittal is very similar to.
Yeah.
I wanted to see what it looks like present day.
Yeah, the present day, there's one in the staff submittal, but.
I don't think so, not the stranger time one.
No, of the present day house, there is one, but it doesn't show very much of the house.
I see.
It's a little farther along.
All right.
It's just, it shows a corner of the house from the street.
I recall seeing that.
Well, I remember when people used to rent houses like this in Kona. When maybe they still do.
Oh, yeah.
It was really pretty run down.
It is. It's just like my mother's house too.
I think it's exhibit 13 in the staff submittal are the photos that were taken from the website.
Yeah, when the website has my pictures on there. You have a copy because I know we put it in there. It shows the website pictures on there. It shows the house.
Yes,
right there in the corner.
Right there.
Yeah, the one side is the beach road and the other side goes right to the park.
And then the school is on the coast.
And the school is Makai off the, we share the same rock wall on the bottom towards the west.
Can I ask, did you say that you don't think that Kulana parcels are subject to the Conservation District use rules?
No, it's unclear. If you look at the rules that were in effect at the time when she purchased the property, so that was the 1994 rules that were amended through 2006 before the current rules, which are 2011, I believe. It accepts from permitting requirements Kuleana parcels and non-conforming uses. So the structure at the time did not need a conservation district use permit. So, you know, that's why one was never gone for the property. In 2005, when Ms. Hamilton wanted to go ahead and you know, propose the 3,000 square foot improvement, she understood at that time that she had to apply for a permit and I believe prepare an application as well. Those communications came through OCCL and are included in your packet. However, she never pursued expanding the structure. She went ahead and just, you know, kept the structure as it was. Yeah, and additionally, the old rules, if you look at the new rules, they do cover setbacks, so there's a minimum 15-foot setback for parcels that are under 10,000 square feet. The old conservation district rules, though, at the time when she purchased the property, did not have a setback minimum or a setback minimum for parcels that were below 10,000 square feet or Kuleana or non-conforming uses. So this is why, you know, legally, as we look at, you know, the rules at the time when she acquired the property, that, you know, these fines shouldn't apply to her because this is the structure that was there. It's still there today.
So I don't pretend to be to understand the ramifications of the non-conforming, you know, dates and how things change over time, but non-conforming as of 1964 is the. Can you help me clarify that?
So the definition in 183C-2 of non-conforming means the lawful use of any building, premises, or land for any trade, industry, residence, for other purposes, which is the same as and no greater than that established prior to October 1, 1964, or prior to the inclusion of the building, premises, or land in in the contribution chamber.
Right. Yes, thank you. We do understand that role. You know, for Ms. Hamilton's case, you know, it is unique in a sense where we understand that what the rule says, we're saying for her baseline to be imposed, if, you know, DLNR is going to impose $47,000 worth of fines on an owner, the baseline that she needs to be, you know, basically judged on is the structure when she acquired it in 2003, right? So there's nothing she could have done between whatever structure was there in 1964 or when it was entered into the conservation district. But she acquired it in 2003 at a certain, you know, certain size, which was about 1,700 square feet. And so to now impose a fine on her for not getting a permit for the structure that was existing when she acquired the property, I mean, you know, it seems to be a due process issue there.
Was there a county building permit for the reconstruction of this house?
No.
So you make an argument that there's no basis to impose the fines in your letter, right? But then at the same time, you mentioned in your conclusion that the board has the discretion to reduce the fines.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So if we were to entertain a reduction, and I'm not saying we are, but
okay.
If we were to, on what basis do we do that and how do we measure it?
Sure. I mean, you know, looking at what's reasonable for this particular landowner, again, the total fines that are sought to be imposed are $47,000. It would be required to be paid in 180 days. This is a significant amount. When this owner did not knowingly violate the conservation, you know, she didn't do it on purpose. Again, she took the property as it was when she purchased in 2003. So we think these are mitigating factors that the board can certainly consider in imposing any fines should they decide to do so. You know, we mentioned a couple of citations here back in, I think, 2017, 2016. Staff have, you know, certainly proposed to impose the maximum fine in those cases for conservation district use violations. Board considered, you know, mitigating factors, and at the end of the day, they ended up reducing the fines. You know, and we understand that the reason for the fines are, of course, to deter behavior in the future. You know, I think that can be done with an amount that's less than $47,000.
So can I just want to make sure I understand.
Sure.
So there was a this structure was
mm-hmm.
in existence when you acquired the property in what year?
2003.
2003. It was in existence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask a question. Turn from that to the transit vacation
mm-hmm.
rental.
Sure.
I don't have it on my screen right now, but I think the staff submittal had a. Tax payment
yes.
record.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? Was that figure 1,000? How much? What was the figure for the tax payment?
For the, are you talking about the transient tax?
It's lumps them all together. There's a something in the staff submittal. Hang on. Let me pull up. Here.
I'm going to ask him, you guys seem like you really want to see what the house looks like.
Yeah.
Now. And
yeah,
then.
I'm going to have him now. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, I don't know about them, but you know,
okay.
We can pull up
well,
a video.
Yeah,
we can pull up a video to show us the house.
Oh, okay.
If you want me to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
that would be very good.
Okay.
But so while we're doing this, can I okay, so was this house there in 1964?
We don't have information on that, and you don't know when the house changed from.
I only know that.
Judging, it looked like it could have been there in 1864.
that's
what I thought. So
I know the first
okay, so
the house.
Okay, so it
was
there in 2003, and then you rebuilt on basically the same footprint
so,
after that,
yeah.
but without any.
Yeah.
County or conservation district
right.
use permit.
So under the county rules, you know, a percentage of repairs can be made to a structure. So again, she didn't demolish the whole structure and rebuild the entire structure, but she did make improvements to the structure.
Right. But, so do you acknowledge that you should have had a county permit? Not that that's our jurisdiction. permit for the rebuild.
I'm sorry, do we acknowledge that we should have, or that she should have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's something that still needs to be looked at closely. Again, under the county rules for non-conforming uses, there are certain things that you can do without a permit.
So county rules aside,
right.
And the conservation district
rules. Sure. Under the conservation district rules as well for non-conforming uses, if you look at, I think it's section 13-5-22, there are, you know, repairs to existing structures. And it's labeled by A1, which, set, you know, under your rules, doesn't require a board permit.
Doesn't require a board permit.
Or DLNR permit, any approval from DLNR.
Sam, is that your understanding of the rule? Or should we come back to you later?
Do you mean about rebuilding?
If they are rebuilding or renovating on essentially the same footprint under the rules that were in effect in 2005, they need a conservation district use permit.
Yeah.
From the staff or the board? Or?
If they were rebuilding it, board. If it was more than a 50% kind of thing, if it was less than a 50%, if it was repair and maintenance, we could probably do it administratively.
So either way, in 2005, it needed a conservation district use permit. And those, and were the rental restrictions generally in place in 2005?
There was no explicit condition in the rules regarding TVRs in 2005.
Sure,
and there is, okay.
There is now.
If I may read from the rule from 2005, just to clarify, it's HR 13-5-22B, and it says identified land uses in the protective subzone and their required permits, if applicable, are listed below. Subsection 1 states that identified land uses beginning with the letter A require no permit from the department or board. And if you look at, for Juliana parcels, non-conforming uses, if you go through, I believe it's P9 at the time,
yeah.
Or so structures existing, replacement or reconstruction of existing structures and facilities are identified by the letter A, which do not require any permit from the department or board under these rules.
So you're saying under the rules in effect in 2005, reconstruction of a structure on a Kulina parcel did not require any permit.
Correct. That's my reading of the language.
And then you're saying because it didn't require any permit,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't have included a prohibition on transient vacation rentals.
In the rules that were in effect at that time, there were no prohibitions against transient rentals. If you search for the rules, the words transient rentals aren't in the rules. And because she didn't need a permit for the existing structure, so Ms. Hamilton did make repairs to the property. She required it in 2003. She made some repairs and maintenance from 2007 through 2010. The 2006 rules were still in existence at the time, so she didn't need a permit for those repairs. The 2011 rules do have, in 13-5-42, the restriction against transient rentals. But again, that started in 2011. So we're saying that, you know, we're trying to understand if the board has authority to impose a violation for a permit condition for a permit that she didn't need for her use. And we submit that, you know, the board doesn't have that authority.
Can I
need to understand one more piece of this.
Sure.
So would you be also saying that there was a transient vacation rental before 2011?
Yes.
So that there is no, mm-hmm. you're saying you're grandfathering in even your transient vacation, your structure without a permit and even your transient vacation rental is grandfathered in?
Sure. Had this not been in the conservation district, and this was the reason why Ms. Hamilton went ahead and applied for the county permit, County of Hawaii had that, I believe, October 2019 deadline to go ahead and apply for the non-conforming use certificate for transient rentals, and you folks are seeing a number of cases for this. This is why everybody was rushing to get their permit applications in, you know, whether or not they knew they were in a conservation district and what restrictions there might be. So, yes, under the county rules, her use would be grandfathered in. Now, whether or not that's grandfathered in under the conservation district, I mean, it's unclear, but again, the 2006 conservation district rules don't have a restriction on transient rentals.
Okay.
while they have it up here, let's, and then I want to ask a couple questions about the TBR situation.
This rare Hawaiian-style beach house is located just beneath
getting it together with the this last, I think we had the TA tax in 2017, and it's real, just a handful, really. I wasn't pushing it
mostly
until
family.
Yeah, mostly family years.
And then this in your rental application has a list of landowners. Are these the family members that are?
That's just a registration of a group of people.
But are they landowners? Are they?
Currently, just Ms. Hamilton is the owner.
Yeah.
These are totally number here. They're just the log of, I think that's just a good log.
You know, from the pictures.
I'm sorry, I just need this page here. It says short-term vacation rental registration landowner addendum.
Those are all the people that are in the neighborhood?
In the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to send out letters within 500 feet from the house.
Got it.
And then enclosure one to the testimony you submitted yesterday does have her deed. So she's currently the only fee owner of the property.
Sorry, go ahead.
Your home that you have, you said that kind of you use the old number that was from the house?
Yeah, we used it for the trim.
Just
and, the hardy, then we put up hardy panels.
Like you said, you
would do
wall by wall, and
yes.
You went slowly.
Yes.
But looking at this new home, it's completely revamped.
Yes.
It's bigger, it's got everything else. I mean, you know,
yes. Well,
it seems to be way larger than the original footprint of the picture that we see. But you said
it's not. Stuff. It's only 1,100 square feet, really. I drew up the actual room by room. Drawing for the county of Hawaii for when I applied for it, and you see it's 846 square feet of living square feet, and the rest are outside decks.
And you're under the assumption of what the young lady just said, that you didn't need a permit for the county. You're under that assumption, correct?
I was on the assumption that it was kuleana and non-conforming. I had gone to the building department, they found no records of the house, and it was non-conforming. So I went accordingly for that reason, yeah. And this was back in 2003, they gave me this. He said, no records found. So that brought us up to why we did it the way we did. Instead, I had the CDUA actually filled out. I have a copy of it done for 2006. I have it here, but I didn't formally go that route. Because I didn't want to build 3,000 square feet house. We kept simple. It's currently is 2,000.
Chris?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So the question I wanted to ask, I'm trying to get at income from the TDR. And we have exhibit 12 to the staff report, which I guess is a statement of state taxes paid, and it shows period ending 3/31/18 tax $84.32. These are being paid late, I guess, because there's a penalty and interest. Then that's page 12 of 21.
Okay,
exhibit 12. I'm not interested in the property taxes. I'm looking at the detail of accounts, it says. So it says 6/30/18. And it, okay, so 6/30/18 is $1,127.78. Is that for a general excise tax, or is that for a transient accommodations tax, or both?
I don't
know.
So it's also a general excise use. It's general excise tax.
It's a separate TAT.
Yes.
And it's a separate TAT.
Okay, so this is, what I'm looking at here is only the general excise tax.
Right.
The tax or the amount
this is the tax, $1,127.78 for a 3 month period. And I'm not sure why there's only these periods. Were there other periods of income?
Sure. So the first time she started renting or started to get it going was in 2017.
Right. Right.
So I guess you can expand on how many.
Yeah. So it was just a handful because it was at the end of the year, November, December. And I put that the November, December on the March.
So, you see, I'm gonna lay out what I'm gathering from this.
Okay.
If it's the transient, if this is the general excise tax, and not the transient accommodations tax, at that time in Hawaii County, it would have been 4%, and so this would have indicated an income of $28,000. Gross income of about $28,000 for a 3 month period.
Is that accurate with what you rented off?
Does that sound reasonable?
I also include my income from my real estate. So that's what was on there as well. I paid that. So it's besides the TA tax. It was just a general excise tax for that.
Oh, so yeah. This isn't all.
So it's a combination of my income. With that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about, go ahead.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Now, for the period ending March 31st, 2018, mm-hmm. there's a very small amount in tax.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a real estate at that time too?
No. Just on the other, period. Just between
March and June.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a breakdown of the income between your?
I don't have that handy, but
I mean, approximately. You know, I'm just trying to understand.
How
much you're making off of the TDR?
Right. Well, that's inclusive of my real estate side, so that's. More than the TA tax or the GE tax.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's more on that. Those 3 months.
Did you make commissions on your real estate? Is that how you?
Yes.
Did you make a big sale?
Yes. And I put it on there.
Okay.
Yes. And that's my GE tax.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was for 2018.
Pardon?
Is that for 2018?
Yes, correct.
You have in 2019. Do you pay your GE tax every quarter or biannually?
Every quarter.
That's what Chris was just trying to get to see more or less what was, besides your commissions, what was the kind of idea that you would have for the transit tax?
Yeah, the transit tax is around, I would say for each quarter, around $100, because really it was a handful. I really didn't push it until I wanted to get that STVR permit going.
But this tax account that we have here is what you submitted to the county because they want to see that you actually have been active as a transient vacation renter in order to see if you qualify to grandfather in as a non-conforming. This is what you gave them to show
well,
as your tax.
Well, I gave it to them to show that I was doing, I have my TA tax and GE tax and pay them.
Okay.
And then I also provided a tax clearance on my taxes.
I didn't see the TAT in here. I don't know what these reports look like, so that's why I'm asking, first of all, if that was a general excise or if that was a TAT. I don't see a TAT in here.
I think I put some both of them in. Mm-hmm.
But do
so I think the county sent you the whole package of what I applied with.
Okay, let me go back now to really probably the biggest issue here, which is the non-conforming status and what kind of permit would be needed. And first of all, I think everybody would agree this is a non-conforming, the original house is non-conforming. It was, it looks like it's been there forever. It was probably, you know, I think we can all safely assume that it was there in 1964. The difficulty, and this is to you as the attorney, the difficulty I'm having with your analysis of it is that is based on 13-5-7D in the 1994 rules. Do you have the 1994 rules, Andy? Okay. So 13-5-7D in the 1994 rules, which we should use because rather than the 2011 rules, because this reconstruction took place around
2007 to 2010.
Okay. It says, if a non-conforming structure is damaged or destroyed by any means, including voluntary demolition, to an extent of more than 50% of its replacement cost at the time of destruction, it shall not be reconstructed except in conformity with the provisions of this chapter, except as provided under Section 13-5-22P8. And I don't think P8, like, I mean, we can skip to that, but I don't think that helps you. So then the question is, was this structure, this old structure here that we're looking at in these pictures, had that been destroyed or what is the exact word here?
Voluntarily.
To the extent of more than 50% damaged or destroyed to extent of more than 50% of its replacement cost at the time of destruction. It shall not be rebuilt except in compliance with the with this chapter, which would require a permit.
In that case, right, understood. Based on the information that we were provided from the client, is that it wasn't destroyed. She did make certain upgrades over the years. And so based on that understanding, I mean, again, under the rules, it seems to allow repair and maintenance of the structure. So.
Yeah. Now, and then the question, so, I mean, my gut feeling from looking at this, the condition of the dwelling in these photographs, is that it had lost more than 50% of its replacement, the cost to replace it, by the time these pictures were taken. The rule then goes on to say that the burden of establishing, let me read it exactly here so that I don't get it wrong here. The burden of proof to establish the land use of structure legally non-conforming shall be on the applicant. We agree that it's non-conforming. The rule doesn't say whose burden it is to establish that the replacement cost was more than 50%. Normally, the department would have the burden of establishing the elements of a violation. I think this came up, I know this came up before, and I think our conclusion was that the department had the burden of establishing the 50%. Now, as I said, both from the pictures that we already had and these pictures, this looks like something that has very little, you know, to reconstruct it as a dwelling is certainly going to be more than 50% compared to that. I mean, I can see, and then the section that you're quoting is, if you had a non-conforming structure and you replaced the roof, you could replace the roof.
Right, like
you could replace the stairs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can replace a wall.
Sure.
And I mean, this comes up in county building codes as well.
Mm-hmm.
You could replace little by little over time. You can't, and I'm not gonna get into whether
the
county building
right.
code. You know, I don't know whether other board members have a lot more questions, but I don't know how much farther we're gonna go with
sure.
this. I'm very sympathetic with reducing the fines. I mean, I think I can understand where your client is, where you and your client are coming from. I think there's a couple of, I see a couple of issues that we haven't quite talked about yet, and one of them is
mm-hmm.
applying for a permit.
Sure. Right.
And if the department doesn't require an EA,
mm-hmm.
you're definitely a Kuleana,
mm-hmm.
and I think you can confirm with Sam Lemo that your chances are very good.
Okay. Yeah,
do you object in principle to a resolution of this case that involves applying for an EA? Applying for a CDUP.
I personally don't. I think the client has prepared that. I'll have to check with her. So basically what they would want you to do is to go ahead and apply for a conservation district use permit, get the structure fully permitted, so that you don't have this issue going forward. You will have to understand that you'll be subject to the conservation district use permit, conditions going forward, one of which prohibits transient rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And you're amenable to that.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Are you amenable? They've stopped doing the TBR.
Right. The deadline has since passed. Yeah.
They're amenable to stop doing the TBR.
Yeah. All right. So this is a question for you, Sherry.
We took it off. We no longer do it.
Yeah.
I got the letter.
I think one thing that a client would like to continue doing is to allow the community to
mm-hmm.
use the property.
Yeah.
I mean, is that...
we could continue to do that, correct?
Is that something that...
Do you charge for that?
Just for
no.
utilities, or reimbursement of utilities.
Do you have a water? Do you have water there?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have water from county or
county.
Kitchen?
I guess my concern is looking at the papers,
sure.
the position taken by the applicant's attorney, it there looks to be legal issues that you're saying that their grandfather, that there's no setback, there's no TDI and all of that. And it seems to me that those are legal issues. Or issues that should be resolved with the staff. On the other hand, if you're talking about mitigation, then I think we can take a look at some of the what has happened in the meantime. But my concern about voting on this one at this point is I'm not sure what position you all are taking on behalf of your client.
Sure.
Are you saying that there should be no fines on any of the issues because you've got legal arguments? In which case, then I'd like to hear from either staff or our AG. If, on the other hand, there is a reference point that, we acknowledge some violation, then we can get the staff, we can then look at, mitigation issues as to how much it should be. But I'm uncomfortable at this point because I'm not sure from the legalities what position you all are taking at this point. And I'm wondering whether we should just table this for a little while until you could talk to staff and maybe AG office and then come back with a recommendation to the board so that we understand what we're voting on, you know, because I don't, if it's a matter of grandfathered in and if we have no legal right, then I'd like to be counseled on that. If on the other hand it's a matter of mitigation, then I think, you know, I'm prepared to argue it, but I'm not sure what position you all are taking at this point. So, Madam Chairman, I'm wondering whether we should permit the staff and the applicant and her attorney and maybe the staff attorney to discuss this matter and then come back to us later this morning.
And I'd like a minute or two to consult with my client to see what position she would like to take going forward. I mean, our papers, you know, the primary position, of course, and the preference is to have no fines. Again, $47,000 are significant. And we do think there are some legal issues, but, you know, the rules are unclear. And the rules are clear for what's in existence at the time. The setback, for example, I don't think there's a basis to impose the $15,000 for the setbacks because there were no setback limits on properties that were less than 10,000 square feet in the old rules. So I don't think there's a basis for that $15,000. Again, you know, assuming argument that she did not need a conservation district use permit for the structure that she took at the time when she got the property, I mean, I think it would be inappropriate to impose the $15,000 fine for violating a permit condition if she was, in fact, not required to get a conservation district use permit.
Right, which is why I asked the question.
Right.
If you're arguing that there's no basis to impose the fines, then your proposal should have been zero.
Right, I mean,
right?
That's
I mean, to be clear,
sure.
I think that's kind of what we're... So I'm not sure
right.
what you're asking.
And to answer that question, and you don't have to do it
right
now,
now,
but
right.
I'd be interested in, you know, your position number one is that it's a non-conforming structure as of 2003 when you bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would want to know if staff agrees with that.
Okay. Sure.
Second, you built on the same footprint?
Same
footprint. So presumably, so there's a question about whether, you know, their setback is also grandfathered in because you built on the same footprint.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's reasonable.
Sure.
And then, but then there's this question about whether you had a substantial renovation, probably more than 50%, and therefore the rules that were in effect in 2005 would have applied.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd want to
work that
make sure you and staff.
that is for 1 year, though.
Positions.
That's usually within a 12-month period. We took 4 years to rebuild. Repair.
Yeah, no, I think the idea is that, like, if you're really rebuilding the house, it's a whole new project, not just fixing a wall or a roof. And then the fourth question I have is your statement that the TDR restriction wasn't in place when you rebuilt the house, and so a permit wouldn't have required it. But now, so I'd want to make sure staff is, like, you know, clear on whether they do or don't agree with you. Now, if you're going to fix the building permit moving forward,
yes,
you would be doing it under the current rules, which would prohibit a transient vacation.
Yes, and the client understands that going forward, yes.
And we did get an electrical permit at the time. I hope you've...
Yeah, but that's a building, county building permit,
mm-hmm.
not a conservation district use permit, which is the state.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, at least I've laid out my issues, and I think they're consistent with what you guys are outlining.
Yeah, so I'm wondering whether they're... Whether you might wish to discuss it with staff is prepared to discuss it with you and legal counsel to sort some of these things out so that we know what it is that we're voting on.
Okay.
If you're asking for a clean sweep that everything's been grandfathered and there's no violation, then I'd like to be advised by counsel. But I'd like to check and see what your position is as a result of all this conversation today.
And just to, you know, continue my statement, you know, that was our primary position. If it came to the point where the board was going to continue, you know, regardless of what legal arguments we made, impose a fine, and that's why, you know, we ended with, you know, please be reasonable, and we think there are mitigating factors to go ahead and reduce that.
Well,
fine.
I'm wondering if an hour, or because we have a fairly lengthy agenda, whether it would behoove you all to talk, and then maybe the staff can then come back with a recommendation.
So let's do this. Let's take a break for starters, like a 10-minute break. But I think you may need more time than that. And unfortunately, the next couple of agenda items are similar, unfortunate items. So we'll either need to take a longer break so you guys can sort it out, which I'm fine with, 15 or 20 minutes or half an hour or whatever.
And
finish this, or else we'll skip ahead to the remaining agenda, and you guys can take a little break, and we'll come back to the K items. So let's take a break now and just see how long we need to break.
Remaining agenda.
Seeing this.
No, I'm not.
I steal the M things because they're perfect for for my Papa Oli class.
I hope those aren't important tags.
Once you already did. I'm sabotaging the process, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm going to have to make a note of that.
Ten 15 break.